well. Like, that's all very good, you know. But you think about stock market people is that, you know, yeah, we are linked to the U.S. dollar, and maybe it's best we go and link to a basket of international currencies and commodities and things, as was suggested many, many years ago, to at least somehow buffer against that kind of instability. But the relationship between China and United States is so, you know, I see them, I can't use the word criminal, can I? But between two of them, their relationship is so tied to each other's success that I doubt there will be any kind of trade war. You know, we'll talk about it now, and they will shake all kinds of tables and stuff, but in another couple of days, that will all quiet down. Because one needs the other needs the first. That's what the petrodollar is built on, like the Far Eastern countries' relationship with the sale of oil, and the United States' ability to print money, just as they, even worse than Barbados, just print money, because China is always prepared to take up the slack. China and sometimes Japan. Yes, of course, they relieved a lot of that responsibility last year, but they still are a major owner of U.S. debt. And if they remove themselves from that particular position, United States petrodollar will just probably vaporize. So they really can't be fighting one another. Two of them need each other in order to continue fooling the world that the petrodollar is the only real means of international exchange. But that is just besides the point. I really didn't want to talk about that. I just want to respond to what Vera was talking just now. All right? And you don't need Jeremy to come and give you that there. But that's just said. Here's the thing. Productivity, okay? Now, I'm not particularly against lawyers, you know. I mean, they're professionals like anybody else, and they're there to make a living. We all train at school, and we all Bajans when you speak the same way and go eat the same cuckoo at the end of the weekend and thing. You know, I'm not particularly targeting them all the time. I am just, you know, in the old days, they were the only people who were prepared to come forward, or at least who were in a position to come forward and say, well, I'm an advocate and I can speak on other people's behalf in Parliament. But those days should have long changed. My problem comes when you bring a group that has such a heavy emphasis on one particular set, and it has to be because of reasons that are not obvious to the public. So yesterday we were speaking about productivity, how you met, was it yesterday, Tuesday? Yeah. And measurements of productivity, all of which I completely disagree with, but, you know, truth be told, I can't argue with Ms. Sting, Ms. Gale, because the argument was never done. But productivity is a measurement of some kind of worth, and efficiency is not even a word that you should use. But let me use productivity, because you've got to be able to measure in versus out. In the private sector, that is measured based on, basically on your worth, either the money that you make. Now, there are only a few professions in the world that are not really based. They make their money not so much on the volume through the door, but more in terms of the size of the contract that they involve themselves with, or the settlements, or the business transactions that they're involved with. They tag on to that size, even though it's a sliding scale. And that's how they make money. That's how they make their living. And a great living on top of that. So they could probably only land two or three jobs a year, or one job a year, and be a millionaire. And they charge the suit. And I'm saying, there are one or two other people, architects included, that live like that. And my problem has always been with that particular group, is that that is your modus operandi, people with very little in terms of, you know, personal wealth will not be able to attract you or even the best among you, because you're only prepared to go after those who can pay you the most, based on, of course, again, the size of the contracts. So, why is it? I mean, I don't mind having a lawyer or two in a party putting themselves up, because they need to have an attorney general, I suppose, and a speaker or somebody else. But why you had to put so many? Because you cannot measure their productivity.
Sorry, I didn't want to cross you. I'm sorry. But the reality is that a lot of people...
Reality? There's no reality, my friend.
Hold on. A lot of lawyers tend to be involved with political parties and government, because, I mean... Basically, their training allows them, one, their profession allows them to have, they have their own time, so they make their own, so they have a bit more time than, say, even a doctor would.
That was 50 years ago.
But the point about it is that...
The new parties have proven you wrong. The new parties have found people from all over, including school teachers. The new parties have brought even, an independent came off the streets to show that she can find time. You know, you can get people
But the reality is, again, you need deep pockets when you're dealing with this thing.
No. If you needed deep pockets, right, chances are most of them would not be involved. In fact, all of them would not be involved because they're not prepared to pay their own pockets anyhow. The party provides a lot of the funding. You know this is true. That is why people prefer to run on the ticket, because the party provides funds that no one declares at the end of the entire event. And if you were to declare the millions of dollars that are spent by each of the established parties, because the new ones, they got nobody backing them. But the established ones have big backing. They probably do, but not to the tune that you could expect to come, you know, from these established parties. And you know, I would expect for you not really to well, you're not going to disagree, but I don't expect for you to agree with what I'm saying. But the size of the backing of these two parties, all of which goes into promotion, which means the media houses make a good piece of it, it's horrendous. And that at the end of the electoral campaign, they are not going to be asked to divide that, you know, among the 30 candidates each that they have, because each one should be taken at least $500,000 apart to make up for the total amount. But they don't do that.
You don't have actual figures, so don't start calling numbers. This is your opinion.
Because it's all this sort of talk.
Hold on. I was getting
you
around.
You can work it out yourself.
This type of impression that is given all the time. Figures? Where you get the figures from?
Because
what are the figures you have?
I've taken the last elections. I worked out all the ads that were put on television, on radio, on all the different radio stations. I looked at the numbers of stickers I had on the various poles and stuff. I looked at how much the average cost of setting up stage lighting, a whole event at a particular location. And I wrote down every single one that they had for the entire 4 week period. So I have a fairly good estimate as the amount combined that was spent advertising or promotion for the two parties.
So what is the figure you come up with?
Close to $10 million. And I think it's probably, and I'm being conservative, close to $10 million. I didn't include, of course, all the laptops and stuff that they had to give away in terms of, because that was probably given for free anyhow. But if you include that as a part of material worth, man, you're going past 15 clear. You know, that's the part that they talk about the vote.
So you're saying based on your calculations.
Yes. $5 million a party is a conservative estimate. And then when you consider now, and the reason why they don't like the vote buying is because that's an additional cost. You got to start forking out some money to get these people to vote for you. And that could be an easy another $2.5 million per party. So you're talking $7.5 million per party in total worth, conservatively speaking, in order to run a campaign. And you got independents out there, and you have your parties competing with that, you know? So there's the thing. So these lawyers are lined up there now, queued up now to enter Parliament and demonstrate they are very good advocates on behalf of the good people of Barbados. And the reality is that they are not, you cannot measure their productivity. Not one of them. They do not exist on the scale for which productivity actually makes any sense. So I'm not saying that you should have lawyers in Parliament. I'm saying that you can't have that many lawyers in Parliament who expect to win the government and then turn around and tell government like David Thompson, Barbados need to be more productive. Because you're a hypocrite. You'll be hypocritical. I wonder if they had only reduced that number. The Democratic Labour Party had it very good for the past 20 years when it came to selection of the types of, I don't know, because, you know, you may say the Benz and all are smart, but they were not lawyers. They only had 5 lawyers at most. And they were reducing that number. Probably the next time around, they probably would only have 3 if Mr. Short decided to step down. But the reality is, man, there's no reality. You cannot be bringing a whole team of lawyers back to Barbados and say, we are the lawyers of Barbados. We have served you well in the community and in the fraternity. Lawyers have always served Barbadians well, so much so that we are so confident that you will vote for us because we will serve you well in the streets as well as in Parliament and expect that people will vote for you. That is insulting, man. That is just being as arrogance could possibly expect.
And sir, that is your perspective. Huh? And
But you have to agree with me at least some part of what I've said. Because you cannot...
There are merits in some aspects of what you said, but I mean, you know...
Give me three lawyers max. There should be a law to say, okay, you want to be a party? You got to have 3 lawyers. No more. Give me 3 lawyers.
All right, sir. Thank you for calling. Have yourself a great day. Nice hearing from you. I'll go to Walmart, take another call. This is Brass Tax. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you today, sir?
I'm trying to stay as focused as I can be.
I see.
Anyway, let me tell you. Iran said a couple of years ago that anybody who wants oil from them would have to pay them in gold bullion. You read that?
I can't recall. I really can't recall.
Yeah, that was said by the Iranian Ayatollah. You see, anybody who want oil from them, got to pay them in gold. You say that the thing between China and America is just a verbal war, that ain't true.
At this stage, it hasn't. The tariffs of the The U.S. has indicated what they're going to put the tariffs, what they're going to do. The Chinese have hit back saying that they're going to put tariffs on is from pork, beans, a whole bunch of stuff. Right. But nothing has actually started yet. It hasn't been implemented yet.
That's not exactly true. Trump signed something in the White House to put a 25% tariff increase on steel and aluminium.
Yes, but it has not begun as yet. It has not been implemented as yet. Yes, but it has been signed. It has been signed, but it hasn't been actually implemented.
Right. But it may not be implemented yet, but it will be implemented because they don't think Trump will want to sign it and take it back. Anyway, I just want to say to you, though, that Mark Williams was right when he said that people move from constituency to constituency before being notified, because I'm one of those persons. I, as you might be aware, and I think you are aware, because they told you I used to take the bar for you in Goodland, at the Goodland gym. So I'm from Deacons Row, born and raised in Deacons Row, and I used to vote in Northwest. I live in North St. Andrew, and I am told I got to vote in St. Andrew before anybody consulting me or before anybody notifying me that my new constituency is St. Andrew. Hello?
Yeah, but you see, if you're permanently living there and that is now your address and your bills, your tax bills and whatnot are going there, then that I could understand that. There was a story in The Nation about 2-3 weeks ago where a lady was complaining about receiving a letter from Dr. Duguid that she'd be now voting in Christchurch West. He was obviously doing his due diligence and allowed her to know, well, she'd be voting at the particular polling station.
Right.
She apparently was very offended because she accustomed voting in St. Philip South. And nobody informed her that she was shifting from St. Philip South to Christchurch West.
Right.
So I'm aware that a number of these things are occurring, but people need to recognize that what is really going wrong here is that there's not insufficient communication with people. So you find that
due diligence.
Well, the due diligence took place in terms of Duguid, but the reality what I'm talking about here is that there should be greater communication by the EBC to people who they've transferred. In other words, a letter explaining that you've been transferred because your mailing address has changed and your place of residence has changed and whatnot. So these are things that need to be done. So that people are not caught off guard.
I don't have a problem with it. I just feel that you should be informed. But anyway, let me tell you something about corruption. If I offer you a contract and then I ask you to win it for me,
where is the evidence?
The president of Brazil was sent to jail last night or very early this morning. I'm not dealing with Brazil, I'm dealing with here.
But you were just talking about China and America.
You were just talking about China and America.
But the evidence is there. We know that. You know about that. You're talking about corruption. I am simply asking you, where is the evidence of it?
Mark said something that I totally agree with. I've been saying for a long time. We need some forensic auditing in this country, and we will find where the corruption is. You will trace the money to wherever it is outside this country. The president of Brazil was sent to prison. He gone to prison pending the outcome of his appeal. And if he loses the next appeal, he's going to jail for 12 years for corruption. I want to see that kind of thing happening in this country. We can't go along. And look, there's an element of truth in every...
As I said, where there's smoke, there's often fire. But that's all I'm saying, you know. All I'm trying to do here is to get people to understand is wanting to make these accusations. It's easy to make accusations. People love to talk your name. And people make all sorts of accusations and really run their mouth. But is it fact? Are there any facts to support it?
Right? Sanka, listen to me. You know one thing that irritates me in this country, and it may really irritate me? They got blatant corruption and people be telling you to bring the evidence. That does offend me. Like I hear Steve Lashley the idea telling somebody, well, if you've got the evidence, take to the director of public prosecution. That kind of talk offend me.
Why would it offend you?
Because
he's absolutely right. If you got the evidence, carry it.
My son can give me a break, man.
This person here is saying, listen, this person is saying, Mr. Price, where and how do you report corruption? Come on. With this talk about you haven't seen any evidence, I'm a small contractor, and I see this nonsense daily with contracts being given and politicians getting cuts off the top. So this person's writing here, they're totally agreeing with what you're saying and what Mark is saying. It is not a matter of being a gatekeeper. In fact, yes, I am a gatekeeper. What I'm trying to do here, okay? What I am trying to do here is I'm trying to get you being the public to recognize that it's one thing to make an accusation, it's another thing to have the facts. That is why when I speak, I often say this is from X or Y document, because there are a lot of people who come on this program and shoot off their mouth. Make it a number of statements, and there's no actual evidence, documented evidence, to demonstrate what they're saying.
To substantiate what they're saying.
To substantiate anything they're saying. And that is wrong. And it's all you're doing here is you're feeding the people who are for the government, are trying to sow seeds of discord in what the opponents of the government are saying, and those who are against the government are trying to do likewise. It is not right. And all I'm saying is that what is going on in this country now is every blind man can see what is happening. In fact, and I want to read this thing here for you because it's something that really touched me today in today's Nation. On page, I'm looking for it here as I speak. It's on one of the news pages here where there was a job fair. Page 5 today in today's Nation, where hundreds turned up at the National Employment Bureau for possible job opportunities in Canada. And a young person here said, a woman who asked not to be identified, said things in Barbados weren't going well. So the time had come to look elsewhere. I am not looking for any job in particular, but something in the hotel industry would be nice. If you're honest with yourself, you will see what's happening here in Barbados. Nothing is going on and things are declining very fast. I am hoping that I get through and go to be the best that I can be, she said. Now, why that struck me more than anything else was because this is a young person. And when your young people, who we need in this country, our aging population, we need these young people to help build this country. When these people are saying there's no hope in Barbados, and they would prefer to leave, that is worrying, very very worrying. And I want some of you here to think about that. We take our next caller. In fact, we have to take an ad. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. Before we go back to the phone lines, I just want to read this WhatsApp message for you. Mr. Price, I would like to tell you what I experienced this morning traveling in a minibus to Bayfield. And she gives the individual gives the number of the van, which I will not read on the air. The van donpack. And the driver was doing anything about 120 miles per hour. Taking the turns at this speed, my heart was in my hand. I was so afraid. I was down in the back and I thought of getting off. Then the man that was sitting next to me shouted to the driver. He had to shout for the music was blasting to cool it down. Then a woman pressed the bell continuously so that the driver would stop the van. The people started talking. Some saying, cool it. That means telling the driver to cool it, to slow down. Some saying, keep it that way as they will get to work early. Believe me, they have no regard for life. The driver afterwards took it a little easier. Thank God I get to Six Roads in one piece with my heart in my hand. this road needs to be policed. Thank you. That's an experience from one person, and that person, they really wanted to get that message out because they insisted on it, and I've read it. Sounds like a really harrowing experience. You're on Blast Stacks. It's 11:24. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Price. How are you this morning?
I am fine, thank you. And how are you today?
Not too bad. I thought my weekend was excellent. I like.
You, I hope you went to church.
Huh?
Did you go to church?
No, but you never play me in the pit. I know too much about going to church. I'm not, I get in that area right now. I want to go back. Apparently, you didn't hear what is the beginning of the book Black Indians, a Hidden Heritage by William Lawrence Katz. And so Hillary actually has an extract of something that Columbus's son said in his CXC history paper. I know too much. I thought he happened to the bloody arrow back and all, boy.
Anyhow, make your point.
Yeah. I want to go back to Tuesday, but I'm going to give all the listeners a little bit of a chance. I want to touch on something else. Also, something that, we had the a conference here on reparations, stuff like that, in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got confirmation as something which, most of which was made by them, which was correct, and I've always said it was correct. I got it from the horse's mouth. During that conference, they asked for the images in places of worship to be removed. But they see the psychological effect it has on youngsters and stuff like that. They've been through that. Mr. Komachan would explain that a little bit better to you. But I already know about it. During the weekend, the right-hand man for the Greek Orthodox Church Patriarch Theophilus actually confirmed something, a historical record which I read to Ms. Teresa Watson, under the heading of Idolatry from the Bible Dictionary from Princeton that went worldwide in 1937. They had actually problems with the same images in the Byzantine Empire in their time, back in the 9th century. The emperor actually sent and picked up the images out of the church and they killed one of his soldiers. But this was on the BBC and it was heard on the station they're playing, but they would never admit it because we know how it would be with them. They got preachers up there. They would never admit that. But I even have station identification after that program was done, even national anthem to show where they recorded from. So that is their dilemma out there right now. Yeah, but they were correct. You should remove the images in church. This is why a couple of years ago, when Brass Sass went down to St. Peter Downs Place Town, a man by the name of Mr. Everett Bowles, who actually stated that he repairs windows and stained windows in churches, and he said he has to know the history of the church. They give history. He said during the early days, the slaves couldn't read and write. So they used to look at the pictures in the stained glass windows while being told Bible stories. Yeah, some would never go to church. Because truth and fact, Mia Motley's, I think it's her uncle, Alamba Motley.
Alamba, yes.
Yeah, right. He actually showed one time when he was a moderator, they put on a cameo at VOB, and he showed as a disdain for the monuments inside the church. Which is something which, when I went to Sunday school, I used to look and I said to myself, I used to look at the images and these glass windows, and I said to myself, I even remember sitting down there on the bench, and something just wasn't right. And some of us have an awareness, even from a
right. So tell me something. Okay, I've heard you and all that.
I want to go back to Tuesday. There's a reason why I want to go back. Something I asked Tuesday. I go ahead and I wasn't able to elaborate on it.
Okay.
That's why I want to
Well, quickly, make your point. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, on Tuesday, I was speaking about Mr. Barrow. At first, on Soundbite, sometime in time, he was complaining about what we call your education at his time wasn't no real education. There's a man who Mr. Nelson Mandela said brought Africa to the world. His name is Chinua. His first name is Chinua Achebe. Achebe. You've heard of him?
Things fall apart.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So you should sometimes when you hear these newscasts, you should understand already, guy, you know, that they're in Nigeria then. Because he wrote that book because the books that they were actually studying from.
Mm-hmm.
You
read that book? Did you read that book?
Huh?
Did you read that
book? I haven't read the book.
But you should read that book. You must read that book and come back to me one day.
No. Let me finish. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Right. He was actually focused on the program called the Forum, and he actually a song bite from an interview he had with the BBC during his lifetime. He actually spoke about it, and a professor of literature who knew him spoke about it. Let me finish. He said that the books that they were using in Nigeria were written by Europeans who had never been to Europe and the people, the way that the Europeans are describing African people as though they were inferior to Europeans. But you know, he also wrote children's books. And the reason he wrote children's books, because he said that he and his wife heard things coming out of his mouth for 5, 6, and 7 year old children, which they didn't get from whom. Even his own children.
But sir, you need to recognize. Sorry to cross you, because we're going off a little bit here. But the fact about the matter is that those who are in charge writes the history, okay?
Right.
And I mean, a lot of people do not even realize that Europe, certainly before 1492, before Columbus sailed the ocean blue, Europe was basically dominated by the Moors, by North Africans.
But I have a historical reference.
All right, but we ain't going down there right now, because we were kind of on along with this. But the whole point about it is that a lot of the history of Europe that we have not been told or taught, certainly when I was at school, and that would have been in the 60s and 70s, we were not taught about that. And a lot of us only learned that later. But the fact about it is that as long as you are in charge, you write the history. You determine what is and what isn't. And that is how life is. Anyhow, it's nice talking to you. This is Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead. Go right ahead, sir.
Are you on?
Yes, you are.
Are you on?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay. Peter Squire.
Sir, you got a little problem there with your telephone, man.
Pardon?
You get a problem there with your telephone. We're not hearing you at all. We're just getting some beeps all the time.
Okay. You hearing me now?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
On this program, I hear a lot of people calling Waterloo without grace and what have you. Without grace.
So we're really having a problem here in terms of you're really having a problem with your phone. Let's try it one more time, and if we can't get this solved, I'll have to leave. So let's try this again. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about the downgrades, how many downgrades barbers have. If the government was to change, do another government could change that, do anything about the downgrades that we have?
But the thing about the downgrades is that we really have to get our economy into shape.
Yeah, but the downgrades could be, it is something that the downgrades could come through no fault of the government.
I want you to tell me how you arrive at that. Let me suppose something.
Suppose somebody have made an agreement with people in authority from overseas. That could bring about downgrades?
No. Sir, all right, I'm not gonna leave continue with you supposing. Let me get to the point.
The point is that I wanna know. Mm-hmm. I hear the calling for a change government so that another government, they do something about the downgrades and what have you. So I want to know if agreement have been made with a person that's outside the government, and that person bring about the downgrades, if the government could do anything about it. Which even if the government changed,
what
the other government could do about it.
And the simple answer is the management of the economy. We have to stop spending.
The
Hold on. If you ask, a question, yeah. I'm trying to answer you. Okay? Because, you know, the thing that really irritates me, and I really emphasize, irritates me about political types that ask these questions, is that you do not ever want an answer. You just want to make a point that is erroneous, and then continue talking. So if you really want to hear an answer, you will please listen. Thank you.
Okay.
The problem with that we get all these downgrades is that we continue to spend more than we earn. We continue not only to spend more than we earn, then we continue to have the central bank bailing out the government, what is euphemistically called printing of money. All that does is put a lot of money into circulation and causes even further problems. It puts further pressure on our foreign exchange reserves. The only way that we can come out of, we can get back to investment grade, is if we start living within our means. One. Two, being more productive so we can have growth in our economy. That is in a nutshell. It is not about nobody knowing this boy, nobody knowing that. Our economy has been mismanaged over the last decade. And whether or not you are for the government or against the government, the facts speak for themselves. They're there for everybody to see. Now you can go ahead.
Yeah. What I was surmising is that it could be possible that the downgrades could come through an outside agreement that the government could have made about it, and it could bring in jobs in another way if they get through with the plan. But it all depends on how the people see the plan. But if they change the government,
Sir, the only thing that a change of government, look, what you need, I'm not even going to deal with the change of government. What you need is sound financial management, sound management of the economy. That is what you need. I'm not even going to go there with, you know, whether or not you have to change a government. You need whoever takes over, whoever wins the election, to manage our finances prudently. That is what you need. And you need to grow the economy. So whether the Democratic Labour Party wins the government, returns to power, whether the UPP wins or the Bees or whoever else, the PPP or whoever, as long as they can manage this economy prudently, as long as they can generate some growth in this economy, then we can start the process of getting back to investment grade. It is going to take some time, and it is not going to be an easy process, but it has to start, and we have not started. Far from that, we are continuing to spend more money as the government than the taxes, than the earning from taxes. That is the crux of our problem. All right. This is Brad Stacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir. You're on the air.
How are you?
Oh, I'm well.
Oh, good. Glad to hear that. What they call about this morning, Mr. Price, right? Sometime a few weeks ago, somebody told me that the lady from the National Organization of Women, I think she's the secretary or something, so Marsha Hines.
She's the public relations officer.
Right, right. That she, on the program, she sent out an invitation to me to attend some discussion her group was hosting, right? But I know for a fact, I don't really know the lady, and I'm certain that she don't know me, so it surprised me that she was sent out an invitation to me after the robust discussions that we just have. I think you was with moderator on one occasion, right? That me and she does have.
Mm.
And you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, I really I really was surprised when the body person told me so. But be that as it may, I do not believe that Marsha Hines, I could sit down in any with any group of people to discuss these problems with a person like Marsha Hines. Now, only last week, a youngster stopped me on the street and showed me an article which was published in the Barbados Today, referring to some statements this said Marsha Hines made pertaining to the incident, you know, the murder of the police fella in Christchurch.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, she said
that the woman is also a victim.
That the woman was a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And it was disgusting to see that the man had posted these things and how embarrassing it was to the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you think the woman was a victim as well?
Let me finish. She also.
Hold on. No. You can't really say that. You can't say that because there's no evidence of that that has come to the fore. Okay, what we had was a video that was circulating, and the video speaks for itself. I don't have to repeat what we saw in the video. That speaks for itself. Good.
All I'm saying to you is that she implied that.
That is what you read from it. What I got from it is that the fact that the woman has been exposed in this way, in the way she was shown in the video, that she was also a victim. And you have to look, and she's looking at it from the perspective of a woman's rights. And so she had every right to say that. I know that where you come from, you would totally disagree with that. But it's her perspective.
But listen,
at the end of the day, she is supposed to be there to defend the rights of women.
Mr. Price.
Go ahead.
It does not mean that because
But she wasn't right. saying that the woman was. She's not no, saying no, that the no, woman no, was right, no, you know. You she wasn't saying know. That the woman was right.
No,
she was simply trying to express the point that the manner in which the woman had been exposed in that manner, okay, she was also a victim. And I mean, and let's be realist. Let's be real here, okay? The person was exposed for the world to see. What may have occurred between herself as a married person and another person was exposed for everybody to see. So if you go along that train of thought, that the woman was a victim.
The point I am making, Mr. Price, I understand what you are saying, and I hope that you will give me the chance to express
Make your point, man.
Right?
Uh-huh.
I am saying that in a situation like this, where a man has lost his life, friends, both in the police force and outside the police force, and I am saying that be it that it may that she might have been a victim, as Marsha Hines is saying, I am saying the most hurtful part of the whole scenario is that a young gentleman in the prime of his life has gone. Now, we're talking about posting, because I understand she said anytime she gets her children or anything so she can trade there and all sort of thing. We have some situations in Barbados where women, even the woman that was killed down at the Harbour Road a few weeks ago, you would hear nothing about that because she was 72. The lady that was mauled, a woman got out of her car and took the picture of a dog mauling a woman, you would never hear these things from these people. I am saying to you that sometimes it's better not to say anything when these things happen, and everything would have gone along smooth. But these people, as a matter of fact, I don't know if you read an article sometime in February, where a movie star from France got 100 signatories to the fact that they are disassociating themselves with these women, who are only using hatred towards men. Just like that, You don't have to comment. You don't have to comment when people are grieving. How you think the other people feel? How you think the people feel when somebody could say, oh, the woman was a victim? What is the, what becomes of the man and his family who are suffering this pain?
All right, sir, sir, all right, look, because a lot of what you said was just bleeped out because really, truly, we are on thin ice here. And I was trying to steer this conversation into a certain angle, all right? And I really can't steer it that way because I feel how passionate you are on this. In fact, I know how passionate you are about these topics. I was trying to give you a perspective that would more than likely was taken. And that is why Ms. Hines said what she said. She took a certain perspective. And I could understand the perspective. Whether I agree or not is a different matter. But I understand her perspective. And you also have a perspective where the person, the deceased, that though, you know, there should be sympathy given out for the deceased. And I take your point. You have a point as far as I'm concerned. But at the same time, you have to remember that these things are ongoing cases and we cannot speak to them in the manner in which you wanted to speak to them. And in future, if you got to talk about these things, despite how passionate you are, you always have to recognize that there's certain things we have to, that we should not really be saying. All right? Thanks a lot. Don't forget, we at 11:55, we take a break for the regional roundup. So we try to get another call here. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning.
You.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bryce. This is Ryan Winnie. Could you please tell me, is there something about the government sell for plantation? Why are they selling off the land?
Well, the minister made it quite clear in today's article that these are non-core assets. That is, there's just idle land there. The properties are dilapidated, and it's better to get some money for them so that they can help ease the pockets of the government, because the government has to support the BAMC to a tune of $70 million a year. If they can sell some of these properties which are not being used at present, then they can bring some money into the corporation.
But Mr. Price, if they sell off the land, what farm land do they have for anyone to go now and do any planting to bring food into Barbados?
The point was made by Mr. Leslie Paris, the general manager of the BAMC, mm-hmm. that this does not in any way impact the land that's under cultivation. This is primarily the factory yards and the adjacent lands around that.
But it's the, so who are these persons that, do you know the buyers for these lands?
That is the $20,000 question.
But it's wrong. Even the land I heard, we do not know what is going on. These people come in and buy up land and Barbados and do not know. They just sit back and let all these things happening. Sooner or later, Barbados is going to full of skyrise building and, you know, there is no food. Everything you got to do now is to get import coming in. There won't be nothing. The cane, look at the cane. The cane ain't been cut. So what's going to happen to those cane fields? It's a joke. Anyway, then here, have a good day. Yeah?
Thank you very much, Vinnie. You did raise a very important issue in terms of the canes not being cut as yet. The longer they stay in the fields at this point, really and truly, the sucrose content is going to drop. And that is not what we would want, because then we will get less sugar per ton. This is a response to the last caller, not the call before Vinnie. I think the man is correct that these women's groups only seem to comment when it's something against a man. But if a woman is mauled by a dog or something like that, they have no comment or words of support. The support can only come when it's against a man, and it paints them in a bad light sometimes. sir, you've made your point. I'll read another one because we're going to the latest shortly. Mr. Price, I am sorry my suggestion was misunderstood. I wasn't making any suggestions for people to go out on the streets of Barbados protesting, but rather a withdrawal of labor. In a climate where our democracy seems to be under threat, freedom lovers such as myself wouldn't want to give anyone an excuse to use force against the people of Barbados. You can shut the country down by simply withdrawing your labor. Stay at home. That's the kind of shutdown of which I was referring. And bring the evidence, sir. I am sure you are aware, and I guess he's talking about corruption. Bring the evidence, sir. I am sure that you are aware that most politicians are also lawyers. Therefore, making them fully aware that often the reason why criminals escape punishment or prison time is due to lack of evidence. Even in some cases where there's evidence, it isn't enough for a guilty verdict. Therefore, lack of evidence does not and should not be seen as indicated innocence or lack of guilt. Very well said, sir. And I'd like to thank the writer of this for writing it so cleanly, because a lot of the WhatsApp messages we have here are not as clean as this. And I would like to really urge people, when they're writing these messages, to remember that when we pick them up, we read them immediately. We don't have a chance to read through them before we actually read them on air. So sometimes it's really kind of difficult reading them. And sometimes listening back to the podcast at night, you really realize how you're biting your words not to mention certain things. Right? And I'll just read this one more for you. And this person is actually, there are a number of WhatsApp messages here. People are very concerned about corruption. And this person is saying, tell me something. If thousands of dollars is going out of this country every day, how can that harm the economy? I think that really speaks for itself. If the money is fleeing out of Barbados, clearly the more that leaves, the less we have behind. The less we have behind, the more difficult we are going to be in meeting our commitments, our international commitments. And the question I would ask to this letter writer is, what evidence is there that money is fleeing? I guess we'd want these things. We'd have to ask the central bank governor when he holds his press conference for the next quarter. And we'll take a commercial break here. And of course, we'll go straight into the latest, and we'll be back with you after that.